jingle. That is a nice jingle. I like that jingle. I really like that jingle. Wow. Hello. Hello, everybody. Wow. Right on. I know it sounds a little empty in here, unfortunately, I don't have a live guest in my studio with me right now as we speak. So, you know, I started this podcast a few months ago, a couple of years, I don't fucking know, whatever. So I started this podcast a while ago, and I had this great idea. I was like, you know, I am so knowledgeable, and people are always asking for my opinion about things, and they just everybody just gravitates toward me because I'm you know, well, number one, good looking, and number two, very smart and charming as fuck. So you know, I was like, this is gonna be great. I'm gonna have a podcast, and I'm gonna have guests every single episode. I'm gonna have a different guest, and we're gonna talk about all kinds of crazy things. Something's useful, something pointless, something whatever. It's just gonna be great. And I'm gonna have so many people that are gonna want to be on this podcast. I mean, it's gonna be fantastic. I love it. I love it. And then I realized, fuck, nah, I don't know that many people. And those that I do want to have nothing to do with me, like where there's a documented record. I realize that's one of the biggest things. It's all, I have a lot of friends, and they're like, I usually have to get them either drunk or give them aliases. It's pretty funny. So, anyways, this week I have a new show or new season, but it is, I'm using an old guest, and it was also a guest from San Antonio, so we had to do a phone interview, which, you know, it's not the most ideal thing, but, you know, it's what I had, and so anyways, this week I got in touch with my one of my very first friends from college, a guy named Paul Miller. Met him back in 96 or 97 at Texas Tech, you know, we've had a wonderful history together. You know, he and I are both married. We have kids. And so we talk today we talked a lot about football because he's a coach. And then just some of the standard getting old bullshit that we normally talk about. So all that being said, let me shut up and we'll get on with the show. So here comes Paul. All right. Oh, hello, Paul. Good afternoon. Good evening. How's everything going?
It's going good, man. I'm just heading home from work.
Oh, that's wonderful. So, just to remind everybody, you are a high school coach. Is that correct?
Yeah. I coach football at Reagan High School in San Antonio.
So, how long have you been a coach? Remind me again.
Oh, this is my 19th year being a coach, and then my fourth year there. So,
fourth year in high school, and
well, fourth year at this school. This is my 15th year coaching high school.
So, and you've done various sports. You haven't just done football. You've done, everything, right?
Yeah, I've coached, football, like every year I've coached football, but I've also coached, I've coached track and tennis and baseball and basketball, boys and girls basketball, and then I wrestling. I'm currently the head wrestling coach and football coach, and I've been doing wrestling for 12 years now.
So let me ask you, what do you think about, because in the last podcast, we talked about the NCAA rule that they're trying to pass, or they may have passed in California, where the football players can get endorsement deals. What do you think about that?
Well, I know that on that deal, they were talking about, like, you know, them using their likeness, which I get that, you know, teams, you know, they'll put pictures up of whatever kids, or if those guys are, you know, in the hunt for a Heisman Trophy, they'll use it to promote their own program, especially when it comes to recruiting. But, you know, when it comes to those guys, the ones that they're talking about in particular, I mean, those are all, for the most part, scholarship athletes. And, I mean, if you think about, like, today and tuition and everything that goes along with it, I mean, those kids are receiving probably close to almost $250,000 worth of an education. So, in my mind, they're kind of being compensated for that. So, I don't know. It's kind of a fishy deal.
I agree completely, man. When Emma was born, you know, we started being adults, and we started looking at, like, you know, the different investments that we had to do to start saving for her college, and started talking to financial advisors and financial planners and whatnot. And they flat out told us, they're like, listen, you know, education has been inflating for about 6% every year. and it hasn't really deviated much. Like it's going up. It's not going down, and it's rising faster than the normal inflation. And so if you just do a simple equation, you're looking at spending somewhere upwards of like you said, $50,000 a year, and my jaw hit the floor. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And I'm
it's unbelievable.
And I'm like, I'm not talking about I don't want to send Emma to like a private school. I'm just like, you know, normal state school. And they're like, yeah, that's what that's based off of. And, you know, in 18 years, it could be even more. Who the hell knows? I mean, how something's going to inflate. You know, I was looking at some classic cars, and I'm looking at some Pontiacs and whatnot, and they the Pontiac GTOs or the Camaros, those cars sold in the 60s for, you know, $3,000, you know,
$4,000
fully loaded. Like, you would have told somebody back then, like, yeah, no, this Chevy Camaro sells for, you know, sticker price $45,000. They'd be like, you're out of your mind. That's twice as much as they paid for houses back then.
Oh, I know. Well, that's what I was going to say, like, you know, when you talk about like housing, for example, I know, you know, it wasn't too long ago that, you know, you could get yourself a nice house in the suburbs for about between $50,000 to $80,000. And if you had an $80,000 house, that was a decked out nice house.
Yeah.
Now you can't even get anywhere for that much. But
no. Yeah.
Inflation's crazy. Everything just goes up and up and up. And, you know, there's no rebound for it. I mean, I know what with my boys, you know, they're closer to college than Emma is. And, you know, it's like I got to sit down and have a serious conversation. And I mean, I'm not much one to talk, because it's like with me, I mean, I went to Texas Tech, you know, that's where I met you, you know, went to a major D1 university, and, you know, I'm teaching school and coaching.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I'm not one to talk, but if my son turned to me and said, hey, I want to go be a coach, you know, I'd be like, let's go to some of these other places that may be a little more affordable, where you can get the exact same, you know, the fact that I got a degree from Texas Tech is no different in my profession than what, you know, a degree from any other university. It just all has to do with work ethic and what you're willing to do.
Yeah. You know? And who you know.
Exactly. Yeah, that too.
You know, no, that's absolutely true. So back to the NCAA rule. So I was kind of torn in the last episode. You know, I really was torn, because, you know, part of me is just like what you're saying too, you know, that these guys are not exactly not getting compensated. They're getting a really, really good deal. And a deal that not every football player gets, or that all every athlete gets. So they're getting a pretty special deal. And, you know, it's one thing to say, like, you know, the likeness piece, but it's the other thing to say, like, well, they're not getting compensated. But I was also just thinking about it more along the lines of, like, man, you know, what does that do? I was working in Ohio when LeBron James was in high school. And I remember hearing stories of, because he played a town called, his school played a town called Wellston, I think is the name of the town. Anyways, and a bunch of people from the job site are like, yeah, hey, we're going to go check out this high school game. I'm like, why? He's like, well, there's this kid playing. Apparently he's going to be pretty good. Apparently he's really good. I'm like, eh, who gives a shit? But like, imagine how much his jerseys cost, right? His high school jersey, if you could sell that, if he could sell his high school likeness. So that's where I was like, you know, at what point does it become a profession, and what point is it still just a school sport?
I mean, the thing with LeBron James, though, I mean, now granted, the NBA, they've made rules and kind of fixed this situation, but, you know, with him, he went straight to the NBA, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was a thing where once he declared that he was going to go to the NBA, he was still a high school student, and he signed a $90 million endorsement deal with Nike. Like, as a high school student. And so I remember thinking to myself, I was like, gosh dang, I couldn't imagine having that guy in my class. Like, what do you tell that guy that just signed a $90 million endorsement deal? You got to turn your stuff in on Friday,
as a student?
He was still a high school kid. He was still a high school kid when he got that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's
kind of
crazy.
Yeah, listen, your homework is late and you failed a test. So, you know, it's a fact, though. You know, no pass, no play.
No, yeah, you're probably going to fail.
Yeah, that's a pretty good point. I don't know. I'm like I said, I'm kind of torn. I don't know that I'm passionate about it one way or the other. I just don't know how much I would like college football if it became like the NFL.
Well, and the thing you got to think too is that we're also, when we're talking about athletes getting paid, you know, we're also thinking about football, basketball. We're not thinking of you know, the field hockey team.
Oh, yeah.
Obscure college in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
Those athletes, I mean, the thing is that when you look at them all the same, like I said, I mean, in my mind, they've been compensated. They're all on scholarship. They're all getting, you know, even if they're like a D2 or a D3 and they're getting partial scholarships and some, they're getting compensated. I mean, trust me, I know plenty of kids that I've coached that go on and play in college. I mean, they are outfitted in the latest clothes from every, you know, whoever endorses the team. They've got all the nicest clothes, you know, shoes, and, you know, they're not hurting on that. And I mean, and you know as well as I do, I mean, you know, it's not like they're missing any meals. I mean, they get the meal plan, they go eat, you know, they get tutors.
That was one thing that they did change. The NCAA said, because there was something about the meal plans that they said, okay, fine, athletes can get as many meals as they want. There was something about, like, because, like, you know, the dining halls would close on Sundays. There was something about, like, there was one story that got out of one athlete went to bed hungry, and, like, they changed all that. Fine, big deal. But you're right about the scholarships, though, because, like, I'm trying to get Emma to learn how to play golf, because, like, they had to give out so many golf scholarships for every sport, and, like, golf, like, that's a fantastic sport to learn how to play, and you're not going to get hurt. You can play till the day you die. I mean, like, and if it gets, you know, if it saves mommy and daddy some money, that's great. That's just more for my Pontiac 1968 Pontiac GTO fund. So
that's me also trying to push mine to, hey, you need to go learn a trade, go learn how to be a welder, go learn how to do these other things where it's a practical deal. You can go out and, you know, make a ton of money, you know, not. You know, and you knew it too. You know, every other person that was at Texas Tech was so and so business major from one of the Dallas suburbs. You know, like everybody was, and like, man,
that's just
a tough pill to swallow.
It is. It really is. I mean, some folks did really well. I agree, though. I think learning a trade is fantastic too. We are definitely short on welders in this country. So, you know, I personally think manufacturing is not really going anywhere. I think it's going to stay. If anything, it's probably going to go up, just because my theory on manufacturing is it costs so much to move material from overseas or even Mexico to here, and there's the tariffs, and there's, you know, all kinds of geopolitical things. I think the one thing we're going to see, what we're already seeing, is we're outsourcing technology and labor in the computer industry. Like right now, engineering, and there's no engineers. Engineering isn't done in the United States anymore. We do engineering in India and China and Mexico City, because you can just transfer that information. You know, it's data, it's kilobytes. So, I mean, you can just transfer that, no tariffs, no nothing. So I happen to think manufacturing is going to pick up, but that's a different story. Go ahead.
And then, you know, kind of back to your point about the paying the athletes too. I mean, you also kind of run into that issue of, like, kind of like we're, in professional sports, I mean, do you cap them? Do you give them a salary cap? Do you? Because I mean, you get schools like UT and A&M where they literally have a waiting list for people to donate to those colleges.
Oh yeah. You open up that floodgate. Like, I said the same thing.
Yeah, they got more money than anybody. I mean, you look at like the New York Yankees where they can pretty much just get whoever they want.
Yeah, and
you
then
know, is that. You know, and it kills the competitiveness of all these other teams.
Yeah, no, I said the exact same thing. And also, I said, you know, now you're going to have these college athletes getting agents. Like, they're going to have lawyers and agents. And I'm like, I understand for, like, the LeBron James or the Kobe Bryant, who was, like, I guess the one right before him. Like there's two in the last 20 years. But, like... Yeah. When you think about, and then also like the same thing with the sports. I said the same thing last time. I'm like, you got football, which pretty much dominates NCAA. You got a little bit of basketball, but for the most part, it's football. And every other sport, forget it. Nobody's gonna give a shit about, you know, whoever's playing the baseball, you know, Texas Tech, you know, pitcher or A&M or any school's pitcher, or, you know, well, it's all football.
But see on that respect too. Is, you know, like you look at baseball, and so that's where you kind of get that slippery slope with baseball. You get a majority of those players have been drafted.
Right.
And they already are getting paid. I mean, I'm not going to kind of name the names, but, you know, we've got a kid, our quarterback actually right now at Reagan, as a freshman, was throwing a 96 mile an hour baseball pitcher. And UT offered him as a freshman. And so, you know, for 4 years, you know, he's going to UT. Well, you know, this next go around on the draft, he's probably going to get drafted. And he had gone up to University of Texas to kind of visit him. And, you know, kind of goes up there to hang out because he's already given the commitment and the whole deal. Well, there's a guy that had just been signed. He was a freshman at UT right now. He was, I cannot remember what team it was, but he was like a second or third round draft pick, and he's playing at UT. And our guy was kind of talking to him, and he goes, "Hey, man, what, you know," he was just curious. He goes, "What's your bank account look like?" And he pulled up his phone, and I mean, think about this. Think about being a freshman in college, and he pulls his phone out, and he has $2.1 million in his bank account. And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "I really haven't had a chance to even spend it to do anything with it. I've been, you know, of course, you know, when you're a college athlete, you're busy." But he's like, "Yeah, that's my bank account right now."
Well, who the hell has $2.1 million in a checking account? Or even a savings account? You put that, you know.
Exactly. But yeah, he got drafted. But see, what they do is, you know, you get drafted, and then the major league team pays your scholarship, or pays your tuition in your way through college. So that's like a way that they get away with it, and then, like, the team also doesn't have, you know, can give that scholarship to somebody else. So they're basically a tuition athlete, but the Major League Baseball team is paying their way through.
Yeah, that's insane. I don't know how that works. That's insane.
They do that. It's kind of crazy how they do that.
You know, one of my friends, he was a coach in Austin, like a little league coach, and he coached who's the quarterback? Mayfield. He coached Mayfield.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield.
In baseball. Yeah. He said he's probably a better baseball player than a football player.
Yeah, I've heard that.
But you know, the football pays the bills. So let me ask you. Okay, so we're going to talk some sports here since that's sort of your area of expertise. So what are you thinking about these new rules about, like, the targeting and the blind? The one that it's been, that I caught a lot this, or that I saw a lot this weekend, was the blindside blocking.
Yeah.
The blindside blocking. Well, what do you think about all that?
I think they're big deal. Of course, it kind of comes back from all that CTE stuff.
Remind me again, what is CTE stuff?
It's basically talking about, like, when you get multiple head trauma, like, over a prolonged amount of time, it causes that brain to kind of prematurely start to kind of deteriorate. So, like, for example, you know, like a Junior Seau, if you remember him from the Chargers. I mean, he, you know, unfortunately, he committed suicide. But when he did, and they analyzed his brain from years and years of head injury, he had, like, the brain of an Alzheimer patient, because it had been so it degraded so much from all the contact. So they're trying to, you know, of course, to cut back on a lot of that stuff. I mean, that's the big deal. I mean, you know, everybody's like, "Oh, you know, it's not the same game." I mean, you know, you can kind of understand the recourse of it. I mean, you know, those guys, of course, they get to the NFL, they're millionaires and all that great stuff, and they make all this money, you know.
Yeah, but they're vegetables by the time they're 50.
But when they're in their 40s or 50s, they can't even get out of bed and can't even hardly walk around, and they have to live with that for the rest of their life. You know, when the game is over, nobody really cares about them, and nope, they're kind of having to live with that. So it's kind of what they have to deal with. I remember, hearing an interview with Tony Siragusa. You know, he used to play defensive tackle for the Ravens, amongst other teams. And, you know, he talked about, you know, when you're in your 20s, you know, you have a game on Sunday, you kind of recover on Monday. And usually, he said, usually by Wednesday, you're back. You're back and you're good to go and you're ready to roll. He said, when you get to your 30s and into your 40s, he said, you never recover. Like, you play that game Sunday, you kind of barely get your feet underneath you on Friday, and then you're already playing another game on Sunday. And he goes, you don't even recover until maybe like March or April from the entire season. And he goes, it just takes a toll on you. And, you know, and I can imagine that, but I mean, you know, that's just, it's all about the, you know, making a little more safe, because they had gotten such negative publicity from, you know, the players that either killed themselves or, like, snapped and murdered a bunch of people, or, people had got, you know, neck injuries or whatnot. So I know that's a big crackdown.
Yeah. So you're coaching, you're coaching high school kids. I mean, what do the parents say?
Well, the thing is that, I mean, I because of a lot of that.
Yeah.
I mean,
wait. Actually, hang on. Let me back up real quick. Have you noticed, you've been coaching for 19 years, have you noticed a drop in the number of football players that are, like, trying out for the teams?
Yeah, numbers for football specifically have dropped a lot since I started. I know, we would usually have, I mean, I know at the previous school I was at, and, you know, we would have, at the very beginning of the season, have somewhere around 100, maybe 120 freshmen, probably another 95 to 100 JV kids, and then probably another 50 or 60 on varsity. Yeah. And I mean, that's a massive amount of kids.
Yeah, that's like 400. 400
yeah,
kids.
Yeah, and it's dropped significantly. I know, you know, most teams around where we are probably at the 250 to less. I mean, closer to 200 range because of that. And again, there's multiple reasons behind that, but I think, you know, like we just talked about, like with football, I mean, if they were to go on and they were to, you know, play it, you know, into college, and if they were fortunate enough to go in the NFL, I mean, average shelf life of a football player in the NFL is 5 years. I mean, usually 5 years they're done.
Yeah.
But like, you look at like NBA players, or you look like Major League Baseball players, those guys play for, you know, 20 years.
Yeah.
And they can play that for their whole lives. And so you see a lot of those kids, and you know, there's also things that come along with that, like select teams and, you know, teams outside of the school.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. Like, when you talk, like, soccer, like, the especially, like, in Texas, like, I'm sure every state in the United States, soccer schools, like, the schools at the normal high schools, they don't really have the best soccer players. Most of the soccer players are really good, that are really good playing club teams, these private club teams. But you don't have that with football.
Yeah.
I mean, football is, the best football players play for the schools.
I think a lot of they've attempted to do select teams, but the select teams can't really get around. I mean, can't really do anything because, you know, again, you know, if that kid gets hurt in a select, you know, they're not going to get the exposure in select that they would in high school. But see, the thing that's hurting high school football are the charter schools, and we kind of fought that a little bit last year.
What happened with what happened with the charter schools?
Because what they'll do is, if you've ever heard of it, there's a private school out in Florida called the IMG Academy. And basically what they do is they try to run their high school. It's an athletic specific school. Now they do all the regular stuff. You know, they got classes and all that stuff, but it's an athletic specific school. And they go out and they recruit all these kids. They throw money at them. They basically offer them all these scholarships and all this exposure and all this stuff. And so a lot of schools have started to pop up to try to be like this, because they can literally go actively recruit kids. They, you know, we can't go recruit kids, but they can recruit kids. They can also, hey, we're gonna play this weekend, and we're gonna play out in California this weekend, or hey, next week we're gonna play in Florida, and then the week after that they're gonna come to us, and you know, you kind of throw all these, you know, this travel and going to all these crazy locations to high school kids, and they, you know, their eyes get real big. Or hey, where are you going to play? Oh, we're going to play at our regular home stadium this week. And then, so it's kind of a weird deal, that whole charter school thing. So that was kind of coming at us. But I know a lot of schools in other states, like Florida, for example. I know, like, in Nevada, there's a really big one in Las Vegas that's a private school that recruits all these kids. And, of course, they've got the track record of having all these – D1 athletes that have come out of their school. And so, you know, of course you get these high school kids and you start kind of filling their head with that. They see that and they don't understand that maybe, you know, I run a 5 flat 40, but if I go pay my money and go to this school, I'm going to get a D1 offer. And that's usually not the case.
Yeah. I was going to say, I mean, it's gotta be all about, you know, moving on and getting something from college and maybe getting into, like, just, I mean, at least that's the way it is with soccer, but I can't imagine that really helps the cause.
Well, the thing is, though, in this generation of kids, they're so driven by social media and status that they can sit there and say they go to this school or they go to that school, and you know, they can pump themselves up on social media and try to, you know, and a lot of it is just kind of bragging to other people, even though they may not be very good football players, but or soccer or baseball or basketball or whatever the case may be, to try to kind of draw, you know, drive their narrative and look at me thing, even though they may not be a very good player.
But do you think also that the drop of students in football is also due to the injury or the fear? Because I think I've been seeing a lot of parents be, you know, trying to drive their kids.
A lot of that is driven by parents that are scared of their kids getting injured. Now, you know, injuries happen. Trust me, injuries happen in every sport. I mean, it don't matter. I mean, trust me, I think I saw a stat not too long ago that the sport that has the highest risk of concussions is actually cheerleading.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that.
Than football. And so, I mean, but it's just that stigma that's kind of around it. Now, here in Texas, I mean, you know, football is king here in Texas, so you're always going to have kids wanting to play football. But, you know, other states where it may not be as big, it, you know, I know a lot of those teams, they struggle to get kids out and keep them in, especially today.
Yeah. You know, what's really big here, and what I see growing a lot, I don't know about in San Antonio, but in Houston, we're seeing a lot of rugby. Because of a lot of the international folks that live here and whatnot, I see a lot of seeing a lot of rugby, and soccer's huge here. I mean, soccer's just enormous.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was watching this thing on HBO. I was just flipping channels, and they were doing a story about Diego Maradona, the Argentinian soccer player, and basically from what I was watching, it was talking about like he'd play on Sunday. He was in Europe at the time, in Italy, and he was playing on. He'd play on Sunday. Right. And then like after the game, he would just basically party for 3 days. Like he would go drinking, go out to strip clubs. I mean, he was just an absolute animal, just partying like crazy. And this is, I guess, in the 70s and early 80s. Obviously, you know, cocaine was a major factor. And basically he would like after Sunday game, he would party till Wednesday. And then Wednesday he'd start cleansing his body. And then, yeah. You know, training and getting ready for the next Sunday game. Whereas, like, what you're talking about with football, American football, you know, yeah, they play on Sunday and they can't walk until Wednesday, you know, and when they're young. Whereas these guys are, you know, and these soccer players are I'm not saying that's what happens now, but, you know, it's definitely a lot. There's no comparison. Soccer is definitely a lot less physical
less strenuous on your body as far as impact and contact.
It's not near as much contact. And rugby is, but what I was wondering is what would happen if we were to get rid of pads in American football? What do you think would happen then?
Well, it would change it quite a bit. I mean,
would get better or worse?
It would turn more into like a flag football or a 7-on-7 type. I don't ever foresee that happening. I don't see them just getting rid of pads and just kind of going like a non-contact type deal.
I'm not saying non-contact. I'm just saying what happens, because you remember when you practice without pads, it was a lot easier.
Yeah, but then of course that's all safety precautions. Because I mean, today, I mean, players are bigger, faster, stronger than they've been in the past. I mean, they really are. And if you don't put the kind of a layer in there and you get just one of those animals that just runs over people and hits people, I mean, you're probably going to have even more injuries than you ever would.
I remember they used to call them John Madden used to call them slobber knockers when like a tight end would go across the middle and jump up for a catch and some linebacker would, you know, just slobber knock him, hit him while he's in the air, and the slob from his mouth stays. That's what football was all, and that's what football is all about. It's weird, like I said, it's just weird watching the games this weekend. You know, one of the Tech players got ejected towards the end for a blindside targeting. And I remember, you remember Dwayne Slay, that safety had? Oh my God, he would hit people so hard, both of them would get knocked out.
Yeah, and the thing is, they do. He would torpedo people. But it's like with the blindside. I mean, granted, if the player's looking away, I mean, that's when, if you ever look up like hardest hits or biggest hits, the majority of them are blindside or peelback blocks. Literally, like somebody's pursuing and they're looking kind of like at somebody and they don't see, you know, the brick wall they're running into, and the guy just, you know, puts his, you know, when I was a kid or when I was younger, it was all, oh, you know, hit him in the ear hole, like put your face mask in their ear hole.
Yeah.
And those were the big hits, but those are the ones that are really, really messing people up. I mean, those are the ones that now has become that blindside. And like I said, you get suspended, you know, you get a blindside, there's no warning. I mean, you are
ejected
from the game, and then you're out for the whole first half of the following game.
Yeah.
So it's just the fact matter, you got to change that technique and you'll help that out. So
how do you guys train the players now? What do you teach them now?
Ironically enough, we have like these new tackling certifications that we do that actually use techniques that they use in rugby. So it's funny because in the old days, if you were going to do an angle tackle, let's say somebody's running kind of at a 40, like I'm facing them, but they're running at a 45 degree angle to try to go around me.
Yeah.
Well, in the past, what you would do is you would try to get your head across the bow. So as I ran to meet this guy at that 45 degree angle, I'm going to try and get my head all the way to their outside shoulder bring my arms through, wrap them up, and then take them to the ground.
Okay, well, using kind of lateral momentum.
Yeah, that gets my body in front. That stops their momentum from going forward. And, I mean, you know, but again, that puts my head right in the middle of the tackle. Well, now what they train you to do is to track the back hip. So run at the back hip as they're running kind of like at that angle. And what they train you to do is run through the back hip with your head behind them and then wrap them up. And, again, it's similar to a rugby tackle is what is being taught now. Now, unfortunately, when it comes to football, that leads to poor technique and that leads to arm tackling.
Yeah.
Which is not the greatest technique, but again, it gets the head out of the tackling, gets the head out of the game, and is trying to help, you know, in that regard. So
I wonder if we're going to start seeing, yeah, because like one thing I did take away from this weekend's games are just, yeah, the tackling's a lot weaker now. And players or runners are able to break free. I mean, they're almost bouncing off of everybody, and that's probably where this is coming from, just the fear of using your head or older techniques. Well, that actually, you know what, I take it back. No, players, there have always been people that are shitty at tackling. But.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So, you know, I was talking with some coworkers on Thursday, and oddly enough, we were having a little bit of a it was like a little happy hour. We're talking about stuff, and we got into the conversation of the whole "I'm so old" back in my day. And I was talking with some folks that went to A&M, Texas A&M, and they were talking about like, yeah, man, when I went to college, you know, when I was in college, there were still bars where you could smoke in. And I don't know if you remember this, but I was like, you know what? When I went to college, you could still smoke in the dorms. Like, there was a floor, the first floor, I think it was first or second floor of the dorms I was living in, you could smoke. You could request smoking rooms. Like, how long ago this was.
Well, I remember smoking in restaurants, too.
Yeah, well, the restaurants, yeah, of course. The restaurants, but the idea of, like, a college campus where, like, yeah, no, what dorm are you? Like, I'm on the smoking floor. Like, that's the dorm. That's the floor that it was insane. And the people just looked at me like, wow. And like, yeah. And also, we didn't have internet connections. Like, we had telephone lines. Like, we didn't have, you know, Ethernet and all this, you know, built-in Wi-Fi across the campus. Like, no. It was hardline. It was there was no Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
In 1996. Exactly.
Well, so, that, and, you know, you think about beepers and you think about having to go find payphones and all that stuff too. I mean,
you know, crazy. How distracted are you finding the kids now that you're teaching or coaching with the phones?
Well, it's more so in the classroom. I mean, you know, the thing is like, it's an unwinnable battle because you would be spending your entire time to, you know, fight kids on phones. I mean, you can clearly tell them your expectations and, you know, normally, you know, 9 times out of 10, the kids will put them away or, you know, whatnot. But, and again, you know, the best thing about the phone is you can use it for your advantage. So like, as you're talking about something, you can tell, okay, get on your phone, look this up as you're discussing, and they can look up things or, you know, there's a lot of more interactive, like, lessons you can use. Like, for example, like you could do like a Jeopardy on the board, and if they go to a certain website, as that Jeopardy's on the board, they have the same interface on their phone, and they can actually answer questions and
oh, you know, yeah, I've seen them like do that in meetings.
So it's not a bad deal. I mean, you just got to implement that technology.
You've got to incorporate it. You can't just get around it. You can't just say phones in the pocket. Like, no, you got to. It's positive reinforcement. You got to give them something productive to do. That's crazy. Yeah,
and really, with me, I mean, I've got. Like, I teach from PowerPoints. Well, they can access a website that as I'm talking, they're having the exact same PowerPoint coming across their cell phone as I'm talking.
That is crazy. Helps out
with it. Yeah, with everything that's going on there. I mean, imagine that being at Tech. I mean, literally as it's going through, they can sit there and screen cap the slides on the PowerPoint so they can have it for later. They can just go back on that website later and access the exact PowerPoint that I just went over, and they can use it. And they can, like, go back and write notes and look over their stuff too. So,
well, does that make them smarter, or are they still those results haven't changed?
Well, I think it kind of makes them lazy because they're not as resourceful. Like, when they don't have to actually look up the information anymore and kind of teach it themselves, they can just kind of regurgitate, which is kind of a bad thing. So, you know, and I kind of fight that with my kids too. You know, like, we'll try to go somewhere and I'll be like, hey, look it up on your phone, get the address. And it's like, when I say that, they just completely shut down, don't know how to do that. I'm like, it's literally right there. Click on the little map app, you know, type in the name of it, and look it up. And it's like, they can't fathom that. That's not been handed to them. So that's the problem, too.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, you know, I will say, whatever these, you know, Google and Facebook and how they figured out how to, like, draw your attention, I got to say, I get hooked too sometimes, and Amy catches me sometimes looking at my phone. When, you know, when I'm really hanging out with them, I try and keep the phone away or not even bring it with me in a room. And it gets frustrating too, because like, it's such a dopamine drip, right? I mean, like the instant feedback, right? Like checking likes, like whoever invented that fucking piece of Instagram or Facebook or whatever it was, where it's like, hey, you get to see how many people have liked your stupid fucking picture of whatever I'm cooking day. Like, it's that instant feedback is insane. How satisfying it is, or gratifying it is.
Well, think about that when, you know, when your body has even created a physical reaction to it. I mean, how many times have you ever gotten a phantom buzz in your pocket? And your phone's not ringing, but you get that little twitch and you think that your phone is ringing.
Yeah.
And you look down and nothing's happened, but your body, like right there on your hip in your pocket, like twitches like it's buzzing.
Yeah.
They said that was like a phenomenon that's been brought on by cell phones, that when they buzz in your pocket, your body is like compensating for that.
So for me, it's my wrist. Cause I got one of the, I don't have an Apple Watch, but I've got one of those, you know, tracker watches, you know, pedometer watches that's got the notifications. And I don't know how I feel about that anymore. I used to really like it because I've turned the ringer off on my phone. I don't use a ringer on the phone. Just, my wrist vibrates. But because of that, because I don't really have my phone in my pocket all the time, but because of that, just like you said, I've got my phantom wrist buzzing, and I don't know where I am with that. I'm toying with the notion of just getting rid of all that shit and just dealing with my phone. But you know what also? Like, I don't know about y'all in school, but like, or teachers, but like in the workplace, we've gotten rid of, Indy's barking. We've gotten rid of telephones. We don't use telephones at desks anymore. They do voice over IP, and everything is like Microsoft Skype or whatever, and then voice over. And what I've noticed there is like, well, now, like when the internet's down or the internet sucks, like the net doesn't work. I'm like, I need to call somebody. I just want to talk to them on the phone. And I like, well, call me on Skype. Like, well, I don't have a fucking headset on my computer. Like, I just want to talk. Like, can we talk like vocal, like la, la, la. Like, I don't want to, I don't want to IM and I don't want to. So it's some of that shit just gets a little excessive, but that being said, I don't know if I don't know if the Apple Watch and those things and all that is making it better or worse. I really don't.
Yeah, and the problem is, like I said, it brainwashes you. I mean, I know I have an Apple Watch. I mean, and it has the little like fitness goals of the day, like are you gonna stand up so many hours a day and burn this many calories and all that stuff. And it's like, I don't get anything from it. Like, I don't get like a reward or them send me money or anything like that by doing it. But like, in the back of my mind, it's almost like I got to do those goals every day. Like, if I don't do those goals every day, like, something's off.
Yeah.
And so, like this summer, I bought three, like, really nice watches. Like, really nice Invicta watches. And it's like, I want to wear them. But, like, when I put them on, in the back of my mind, it's like, I'm not going to get my fitness goals. I'm not going to get my goals recorded on my watch.
Yeah.
And it's like, but I really don't need that. I mean, it's weird. It's like, it's almost like a internal deal that it's like an OCD thing where I have to do it. I don't know.
You know, I'm almost there too. I'm thinking about, just because you can get like the Fitbit that just clips to your belt or whatever. And actually, when I first got them, that's what I had. They gave them to us for work, the kind that you clip on your belt. And I noticed that I would get like 2,000 steps more a day when it was clipped on my belt than when the wrist. I think the belt is definitely more accurate. Because I definitely noticed, Amy's got one that clips on. I might try and borrow hers and do a comparison to see which one it is. But you know, I started running this summer, and you know, I kind of want to track my runs and see how fast I'm running and everything. And I'm still fat as shit, but still I want to, you know, try. And I almost regret not getting the really nice Fitbit that's got the built-in GPS, so I don't have to carry my phone with me. But at the same time, it's like, man, I got all this extra shit. Like,
oh,
I don't need it. Like, I don't give a fuck what my heart rate is. Like, I know that it's high. Like, it's high. It's the, you know, and I don't give a fuck. I know what 3 miles is because, well, number one, that's when my legs seem to fall off. And number two, I'm fucking running outside. Like, I know. Like, I go down here. That's a quarter mile down there. That's a, like, I've already measured it. Like, I can keep doing that. I'm like, that's 3 fucking miles. And then if I need steps, I'm like, well, 3 miles equates to about, oh, you know what's funny? I didn't have my Fitbit watch with me. My fucking Indiana's barking. So I didn't have my Fitbit one day and I had to go running and I just turned the GPS on my phone and it calculated the steps for me, even though I didn't have my pedometer. So anyways, some really boring shit. Some riveting conversation talking about fitness.
But hey, bud, I do have to run, man. I'm about to get to my house. I'm about to lose signal. But, man, it was great talking to you, and I look forward to listening to the podcast.
All right, Ray, man. Thanks a lot, Paul. Take care, buddy.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
All right, there you go. Bye.